This is World Lutheran News Digest, an audio news magazine bringing you a look at significant events in worldwide Lutheranism. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
Today on World Lutheran News Digest,
I'm World Lutheran News Digest host Kip Allen. Laws defining marriage as being between a man and a woman are under judicial attack. Gay rights activists claim that same-sex marriage is protected under the 14th Amendment and that all states should be required to license gay marriage. That issue is now before the United States Supreme Court, which is expected to issue a ruling by the end of the month. This ruling will have an enormous impact on the issue of religious liberty. Jim Campbell is a senior legal counsel for the Alliance Defending Freedom, an organization advocating for people of faith. He recently addressed an assembly of the LCMS via a webinar to explain the legal issues involved. World Lutheran News Digest offers part of Campbell's presentation.
And now today's Fast Track.
Here's news in brief of interest to Lutherans worldwide. 21-year-old Dylan Roof has confessed to the killing of 9 people at the Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston, South Carolina earlier this week. He was apprehended in North Carolina 36 hours after the shooting. Roof, who is white, shot and killed 9 African Americans at the church during a Bible study and prayer meeting. Reportedly, he told police that he hoped to start a race war. In a unanimous decision, the U.S. Supreme Court decisively affirmed on Thursday that the government cannot play favorites when it comes to free speech. Alliance Defending Freedom attorneys representing an Arizona church in Reed v. Town of Gilbert, a case involving restrictions on temporary signs, the justices reaffirmed and clarified that government cannot single out one form of free speech over another based on how worthy the government thinks it is. In its decision, the High Court threw out a free speech test used by some courts that allowed government to decide what speech is more valuable and thus entitled to greater protection under the First Amendment. The test improperly excused unlawful discrimination so long as the government said its motive was good. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit used that test to determine that the Good News Community Church's religious signs expressed far less valuable speech and what the town called political and ideological signs. Senator Mike Lee, Republican of Utah, and Representative Raul Labrador, Republican of Idaho, reintroduced legislation in their respective chambers on Wednesday that would prohibit the federal government from denying tax exemptions or other government benefits to individuals and institutions that promote traditional marriage. Protecting religious freedom from government intrusion is a government interest of the highest order, the bill states. If the U.S. Supreme Court rules that gay marriage is a constitutionally protected right, the First Amendment Defense Act, as it's called, would prevent the Internal Revenue Service from denying tax-exempt status to churches that refuse to officiate on same-sex weddings or from disallowing tax deductions for charitable donations to them. Students at 16 Israeli high schools are completing a year-long pilot program developed by the Washington-based Museum of the Bible, funded by the billionaire Green family, who are the owners of the Hobby Lobby craft store chain. The Israeli pilot program represents the museum's first successful educational program. 7 additional schools have requested the program for next year, but the first launch of the museum's ambitious Bible curriculum did not go so well. Last year, an Oklahoma school district shelved a similar curriculum after the ACLU, Americans United for Separation of Church and State, and the Freedom From Religion Foundation filed a Freedom of Information request to determine the school board's role in developing and approving the curriculum.
This is World Lutheran News Digest. The work by the Hehewee Longathi Lutheran Firehound.
Jim Campbell, senior counsel for the Alliance Defending Freedom, recently discussed the legal issues involved in the case before the Supreme Court concerning gay marriage. Here's part of his presentation.
The first question on everyone's mind is how might the court rule in these important cases? The first thing to note at the outset is that there are 2 questions before the court. The 2 questions are what I call the licensing question and the recognition question. The licensing question is, must a state license a same-sex relationship as a marriage within its borders? And then the second question, which I refer to as the recognition question, is, must a state recognize a same-sex marriage created in another state? So those are the two questions before the court. And again, while they are related, there are some distinctions. So what I'd like to highlight very briefly are the two most likely outcomes when a court faces such a massive issue like the one before it. There are so many different ways that the court can go that it's really hard to pin down exactly what the court will do. But I will start, as I said before, with the two most likely outcomes. So those are a win on both questions. And that would essentially affirm that a state may continue to define and understand marriage in the law as the union of a man and a woman. So that they need not either license same-sex relationships as a marriage, and that they need not recognize such a marriage created in another jurisdiction. So that is the first potential outcome. The second potential most likely outcome would be a loss on the first question. And if there's a loss on the first question, and the court says that a state must license a same-sex relationship as a marriage, then there's no need to decide the second question. The implications of a loss on the first question is essentially that there would be same-sex marriage in all 50 states, and the marriage would be redefined across the nation. So those are the two most likely outcomes. But now let me talk about very briefly two other less likely outcomes that are at least worth mentioning. Those would be what I call a win on the first question and a bad loss on the second question. So let me explain what I mean by that. A win on the first question would be a state doesn't need to license a same-sex relationship as a marriage, but a state must recognize all same-sex marriages created in another state. Now, effectively, what that would do is to bring about a 50-state same-sex marriage mandate throughout the country, but it would do so indirectly because, as we know, there are a number of states out there that have already redefined marriage. There are about 11 of them that have done so through democratic means, either through the legislature in their state voting or through the people. Only two or three states have done it through the people directly. But all that to say, there would still be some states that would have this redefined understanding of marriage. So all it would take is any same-sex couple interested in taking advantage of that to go to one of those jurisdictions, to come back home, and then to tell their state, you must now recognize my marriage. So the actual effect of that sort of a ruling would be pretty much to bring a redefined understanding of marriage nationwide, even though it would do so in sort of an indirect way. And then the last of the options would be a win on the first question and what I call a narrow loss on the second question. And what that would look like is that the court would say that states can decline to license same-sex marriages in their own state, but they must recognize same-sex marriages from other states unless they decline to recognize not only same-sex marriages, but all other marriages that conflict with their public policy on marriage. So, and what I mean by that is, you know, some states will allow first cousins to marry, and some states will not allow that. So if a state is going to decline to recognize a same-sex marriage from another jurisdiction, then it needs to also consistently decline to recognize all the other sorts of unions that another state might grant a marriage license for that state necessarily wouldn't. So I won't dive into all the details of that because it gets pretty much convoluted and confusing, and I don't think it's helpful. But I just want everyone to know that there are a lot of different outcomes that are potentially on the table, and that is one of them. Another thing that the court can do is, some of you might be aware that one of the primary arguments against these marriage laws is that they are motivated by so-called animus, so-called hatred or ill will against same-sex couples. So if the court were to agree with that argument, it could potentially strike down some of the marriage, the constitutional amendments that states have enacted defining marriage as the union of a man and a woman. It could strike those down and say, well, those are illegitimate because they're motivated by what the courts have referred to as animus, but that this underlying marriage definition between a man and a woman that has existed for millennia, well, that's okay. You just can't have this constitutional amendment that affirms that in your law. But you can continue to have that in your law. You just can't have it in your constitutional amendment because that was impermissibly motivated by considerations that can't motivate laws. And so that's just one example of the potential, again, unlimited options of what's available to the court because the case is so complex. But moving on, the real question in everyone's mind is, well, what might the court do? In other words, you've laid out some options there, but what really might the court do in the end? And I think anyone who's at least a somewhat informed follower of the Supreme Court knows that Justice Kennedy is a very critical member of the court in cases like this that tend to fall right within sort of culture war issues and very hotly contested social issues because he does tend to sit in the center of the bench from a judicial philosophy perspective. So on that question, what might Justice Kennedy do? I just wanted to highlight a few things from the oral argument that I think are interesting in trying to read what Justice Kennedy might do in the end. I'll start with a bad indicator that we saw from Justice Kennedy at the oral argument, and that is the attorney who was defending the marriage laws was interrupted by Justice Kennedy, and Justice Kennedy said, "In fairness to you, I don't understand this point you're making that marriage is not about conferring dignity on the couple that gets married. I thought that was the whole purpose of marriage. It bestows dignity on both man and woman in a traditional marriage." Well, that's a bad indicator, of course, because if that is the purpose of marriage, then that doesn't bode well for the ultimate outcome in the case. In other words, the state's position is that marriage exists to bring together a man and a woman in a sexual relationship so that when they have children, it's more likely that those children are going to be raised by the man and the woman that created them, that those kids are going to know and be known by and be raised by both their mom and their dad. If, on the other hand, Justice Kennedy views marriage as simply a government tool to bestow dignity on adult relationships, then it makes it more worrisome that he might decide to extend that state recognition to same-sex relationships. Of course, I'll point out just in passing that if that is the purpose of marriage, then there's no line that can be drawn to stop at same-sex relationships. In other words, if the point is to bestow dignity on adult relationships, and any adult relationship that is excluded can claim, well, we're being denied dignity from the state, well, then any excluded adult relationship can come and demand the same thing and theoretically can extend the definition of marriage even further. So, you know, an example would be a polyamorous relationship involving perhaps three individuals. If they're not getting recognition from the state is something that they can claim denies them of this dignity bestowing tool, then you see that the court would create an unworkable standard. So we're hopeful that Justice Kennedy will not go down that road. But on the other hand, the good indicator is that Justice Kennedy stopped the attorney arguing against the marriage law and said, quote, "This definition has been with us for millennia, this man-woman definition, and it's very difficult for the court to say, oh, well, we know better." Moreover, not just Justice Kennedy acknowledged this, but Justice Breyer, who, again, anyone who knows much about the court realizes that Justice Breyer is someone who is traditionally acknowledged as more of a left-leaning member of the court. But he even said at the oral argument that the man-woman definition of marriage, quote, "has been the law everywhere for thousands of years among people who were not discriminating against gay people. And suddenly you want nine people outside of the ballot box to require states that don't want to change what marriage is to include same-sex couples. So he too recognized that there's this, we're dealing with something that has been with us for a long time. So we need to be very, very careful when frankly, messing with it by three unelected judges. So that's a quick discussion of how the court might rule, the various options, what we learned from the oral argument, what we saw. At the end of the day, it's anyone's guess how the court is going to rule in the end, but those are the various options. So the next question we have is, what are the potential ramifications of the court's decision? I'll start. We'll go through this pretty briefly. We'll start with the win scenario. Under the win scenario, what would be the outcome? What would that mean at the end of the day if the court found that states were free to continue affirming marriage as a union of a man and a woman? Well, first thing it would mean is that states are free to affirm that definition, but states are also free to decide to redefine marriage through the legislative process. So if the legislators go into session and enact a law, or if the people come together and enact a ballot initiative, then they can decide to change the definition of marriage. So what that means for all of us is that even if we get a win, it is still important to continue to talk to our friends, our family, our relatives about the importance of this issue. Because ultimately what the court will be saying is not that all states have to define marriage as the union of a man and a woman, but all states have the freedom to do that should they so choose. So the ongoing discussion in our society will continue about what marriage is, the definition of marriage, the purpose of marriage, and what exactly should be the future of marriage in light of all those considerations. Also, if the court were to rule in favor of the marriage laws, the ultimate outcome would be that there are still 16 states that, through various state means, either through the people enacting a law, the legislators enacting a law, or the state courts system interpreting their own law, there are 16 states that would still have this redefined understanding of marriage. But there would be approximately the remaining 34 states that would be able to restore their laws affirming marriage as the union of a man and a woman. So at the end of the day, you would have roughly two-thirds of the states that would continue to affirm man-woman marriage, and you would have approximately a third of the states that would have this redefined understanding. Briefly, what does it mean under a loss? Well, as I hinted at when I broached that issue above, the bottom line is that most of the loss scenarios would result in all 50 states either recognizing or licensing same-sex marriages. So the most likely outcome of a loss is that all 50 states will have same-sex marriage in one form or another. The biggest thing to highlight there is the religious liberty implications of what a decision like that would mean. And many of the justices expressed concerns about what impact redefining marriage through the judicial process will have on religious liberty. So I'll just quickly highlight two examples. Chief Justice Roberts wondered whether a religious school, and this is a quote from him, quote, a religious school that has married housing, will they be required to afford such housing to same-sex couples? And he asked that question during oral argument, and he didn't really get a very satisfactory answer. In addition, and many people have been talking about this in the media, Justice Alito asked the Solicitor General whether a decision by the court requiring the redefinition of marriage, whether that would risk the tax-exempt status of a university or a college if they continue to affirm marriage as a union of a man and a woman. And the Solicitor General's, which for those of you that don't know, the Solicitor General is one of the chief lawyers for the federal government in our country, and his response was very candid. He said, it is certainly going to be an issue. I don't deny that, Justice Alito. So the administration has made it very clear that the religious liberty implications are stark and are chilling, and we who have been talking about this for years, while we didn't like what we heard, we expected that. And so to hear the honesty from the administration in response to that question just confirmed what we have suspected for at least a decade, if not more. So the final brief topic is, how will this affect churches, specifically the LCMS? How will this affect pastors, specifically your pastors? And how will this affect people of faith, specifically those in your congregations? So I think the best way to approach this is with a brief introductory point, and then I'll just give you a few examples of things that we would anticipate seeing. The first introductory point is that some of this depends on how the court rules. If the court rules that these marriage laws and this understanding of marriage is irrational or is motivated by so-called animus, then that poses particular problems for religious liberty. Because, as we've seen throughout history, the law, neither the law nor society, is very friendly to those who society regards as irrational or as animus filled. So if that's what the court says in its decision, then that will be essentially a tool that will be used against people of faith for years to come, because they will continue to say your views are irrational. They will continue to say that you really are just motivated by dislike for a certain class of people. So that's one example of why it matters how the court rules. And I could give many more examples, but that's just one illustration to make the point that how the court rationalizes its decision matters at the end of the day for religious liberty and how this will play out in society. So some examples that we might see in terms of if the court mandates the redefinition of marriage, what might be the outcome at the end of the day? We would expect to see, as I mentioned before, as Justice Alito asked and as the Solicitor General acknowledged, there would be issues with tax exemptions. Specifically, Justice Alito asked about schools, universities, Christian universities, Lutheran universities, other universities that operate based on traditional religious principles that affirm marriage as the union of a man and a woman. That issue would almost certainly arise, as the Solicitor General acknowledged. So that's one category of situations we could expect to see. Another situation that we've already seen in jurisdictions that have redefined marriage is an impact on religious adoption and foster agencies. So we've already seen in the District of Columbia and in Massachusetts and in Illinois where there has been a redefinition of marriage or a recognition of same-sex relationships. We've seen that Catholic charities and other faith-based organizations have been driven out of providing those services for people in the community. And that's something we unfortunately would expect to see more of should the state require, should the court require same-sex marriage nationwide.
Worldwide KFUO is watching this issue closely and will announce the decision as soon as it's made. The day following the decision, Worldwide KFUO will hold a roundtable discussion about it on the Faith and Family program with Andy Bates, myself, Kip Allen, and guests. World Lutheran News Digest will return right after these messages.
Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, inviting you to join us for Issues Etc. weekday afternoons from 3 to 5. Issues Etc. is a live call-in show with a twofold purpose. First, we defend and teach the truths rediscovered during the Reformation, grace, faith, scripture, and Christ alone. Second, we challenge today's postmodern culture with its unbiblical ideology.
Issues Etc. live weekday afternoons from 3 to 5 on KFUO Radio.
There's a special place where rare books from times long ago come alive in your imagination. A special place where you can rediscover values that transcend time itself. A special place of adventure, mystery, and drama that's both old and new at the same time. Lamplighter Theater.
Saturday mornings at 11 on KFUO Radio. Hi, I'm Pastor Mark Hawkinson, host of Moments of Assurance, Sunday at 9:15 a.m. right here on KFUO Radio. Each week, I have the privilege of producing a quarter hour of message, music, and prayer blended together to fit a special theme for that day. You'll hear messages of hope and complete confidence in Jesus Christ as Savior and Lord. You'll hear choirs and instrumentals to support the message as well. So I invite you to join me. That's Moments of Assurance, Sunday morning at 9:15 a.m.
Whether you're a regular worshiper at the church of your choice or find it difficult for you to get to church on Sunday morning, you may benefit from our live worship broadcasts each week on KFUO. Our early service begins at 8 o'clock Central and originates from Blessed Savior Lutheran Church in Florissant, Missouri, where Reverend Matthew Roglin leads divine worship. Our live late worship broadcast at 10:45 comes from Timothy Lutheran Church in St. Louis, where Senior Pastor Ron Rall presides during the worship service. Join us for the message of mercy and forgiveness through Jesus Christ, Sunday mornings on Worldwide KFUO.
Hi, Craig D'Onofrio here. I want to invite you to join me Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. for Reformation Rush Hour. We'll have some of today's most interesting and intelligent people on the show. We'll talk about news that affects your faith. We'll look at the world around you and talk about how it interacts with Christianity. And we'll have a good time doing it all. This is the fastest hour in radio as you drive home Monday through Friday, 5 p.m. right after Issues Etc. on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
World Lutheran News Digest may be heard every Saturday at 9:30 a.m. and again on Wednesday at 2:30 p.m. Central Time on Worldwide KFUO Radio. It may also be heard anytime streaming online at kfuo.org. Join us again next Saturday for another new edition of World Lutheran News Digest. I'm your host, Kip Allen.
World Lutheran News Digest is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO. You can also listen to WLN Digest on demand at kfuo.org. To correspond with World Lutheran News Digest, email news@kfuo.org.
This is Pastor Herb Miller, First Vice President of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Every aspect of our teaching is designed to bring comfort to penitent sinners, that is, people who are hurt and broken by sin and death and all the vicissitudes of this life. KFUO is centered around bringing this gospel into the lives of our listeners in the St. Louis area, and by means of the internet, far beyond. My wife and I, for years, have been day sponsors. Our day is June 21st. Actually, this year, we're celebrating 40 years of marriage on that day. KFUO brings the gospel into the hearts and minds and lives of so many people here and around the world.
This is Mary Schmidt. To be a day sponsor, call me 314-996-1518.
June is a lovely month in the Northern Hemisphere. The harshness of high summer is still ahead, and the chill of spring is long gone. It is a month to celebrate creation. Music that does that is part of the next Sing for Joy. Join us.
Sundays at noon on KFUO, the messenger of good news.